The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. The Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, it's that time of the week again. You guessed it. It's Thursday when we do our famous Ask Metaxas segment. Here it is. So you ask, and I'll play the role of Metaxas.
We've got some fun questions this time, I'll tell you. Number one, which book did you like writing more, Bonhoeffer or Martin Luther, and why?
Oh, that's easy. Martin Luther.
Really?
Yeah. Bonhoeffer was an agony. It was my second biography. It's a long story, but it was an agony to write. I was under this horrifying deadline. I mean, I wrote the thing in like, I don't know, no time, day and night. It was very painful. The Martin Luther book was one of the few books I've ever written, maybe the only one, that I actually somehow enjoyed writing it. And some prophetic guy said, this is going to be the toughest book you ever wrote. Totally wrong. It was the easiest book I ever wrote and the one I had the most fun with. So that was easy. The Martin Luther stuff is just loaded with kind of funny, interesting stuff. So if you're looking for a quirky read, I would recommend. I think it's there's some really cool stuff.
Yeah, I had fun reading it.
There's some funny stuff in there.
Yeah. Okay. Question number two. This person says, enjoying fish out of water. Grew up in the same era. How do you remember so many details?
Okay, Fish Out of Water is the memoir of my growing up until my 25th birthday when I had my dramatic conversion, Jesus dream. And Fish Out of Water, the subtitle is A Search for the Meaning of Life. But I always get the question, how do you remember so much? How do you get it? I have no idea. Like, I don't think of myself as having a particularly – I'd love people to point out, like, how do you remember this and this and this and this? Because I don't know. I just remember – you know, we all remember what we remember. So I have no idea, but so many people have said that. And, I don't know, but I'm glad that it comes across that I remember a lot, but there's a lot of funny stuff in that book too. And I want to say, if you're looking for something that's a little lighter, you know, that there's just a lot of funny, crazy stories. And I thought I want it to be an entertaining, fun read. It's all true. Every syllable, trust me. But anyway, I'm glad you get that impression. The answer is, I don't know.
Questions one and two lead into question three. When is your next book coming out?
The next book is titled Is Atheism Dead? You could read it today if you want. It comes out October 19th, but if you join the launch team, you can read the book today. They'll send you an electronic copy immediately. You have to go to ericmetaxas.com. I am hugely excited about this book. There's stuff in here that's going to blow people's mind. That's my next book. It's called Is Atheism Dead? Please do pre-order a copy. You can get it very cheap if you go to the right link. I can't tell you, but at ericmetaxas.com.
What I like, it has a lot of photos in it. So what kind
loaded.
Of, yeah, what kind of photos for Atheism Dead? Okay. A lot of caskets, I guess.
It's a lot of pictures of dead atheistic people.
Go. Okay. If you could meet anyone from the Bible, aside from Jesus, of course, who we've already met, who would you... like that to be and why?
I mean, there's no one answer to this, but can you imagine what it would be like to sit down with Peter and just talk to him?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It would be insane to imagine from the point of view of a regular person like we are of what he saw and experienced and then the madness and the persecution. But there's so many figures from Scripture. I mean, I think the reason that one is easy to answer is because almost anybody from Scripture who was there when these things happened, whatever it was, whether it's Noah or Ham, how'd you like to meet Ham? hey, what do you think of your dad building that ark? Didn't you feel a little foolish? Be honest. Weren't your peers, you know, criticizing you? You were about, what, 100 at the time? That was considered teenage in those years.
I'd like to meet the guy. They grabbed him and he ran away naked. Like, what are you thinking there, dude?
They think that was the disciple John.
Ah.
But anyway. All okay. right. So that's another non-answer.
Here's another question. What is your favorite hymn and why?
Is that him, capital H-I-M? No. That would have to be Jesus.
H-Y-M-N.
Yeah, I don't have a favorite hymn. There are a number that I love. I mean, Amazing Grace is, many people find that to be their favorite. But I love singing. And so there are many songs that where you can really sing and do harmonies, because yeah. I do love to sing and worship. We were with Sean Foyt this weekend, and some of the songs that they sang were so beautiful. Mm. So I don't have any particular favorites.
Okay, because I know you sang the song Feelings way back in the 70s.
No, you're thinking of Eres Tú.
Oh, okay. I would like to hear your testimony about Christianity. Would you share that testimony?
No, I won't, okay. Because I shared it in my book, Miracles.
That's right.
I shared it in my book, Fish Out of Water, and I'm sick and tired of sharing it. But if you go to our website, ericmetaxas.com, there's a video where I give a video version of it. It's a little complicated, so it's not something that I can share easily. But if you go to ericmetaxas.com, there's a video, and in my book Miracles, I tell it. And then, of course, the longer version is in Fish Out of Water.
From your book, Seven Men, which man in that book is your favorite?
Oh, easy. Gertrude Stein.
Uh-huh. Yes, beautiful. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. How is God encouraging you to stay strong and courageous these days? Do tell.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when I go places, tons of people come up to me and thank me for my voice or whatever. And I'm always amazed that they even perceive me as having a voice that's courageous or something, because I think, don't we have an obligation to speak up? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because I studied the lives of Bonhoeffer and all these other great people, and in the Seven Men book and Seven Women book. These are all people that they inspire you to, you want to be that way. And I think that if you behave that way, you inspire others to behave that way. So I really do feel like we're in a war for the truth. And so you've got to speak the truth, particularly when it's uncomfortable, particularly when it's uncomfortable. And I think that the more you do it, the more others around you will do it. So, but I'm thrilled that people perceive it that way.
Here's another question. Inquiring minds need to know, writes this person. How is little Georgie?
Georgie is our dog, half Maltese, half Yorkshire Terrier. Georgie is so spectacular. I never had a dog before. Mm. And I don't think you can be fully American unless you have a doggy or a dog. But I never had a dog before. She's now what? She's going to be 10 in October. And she's a spectacular little creature. Most people who have dogs find dogs really entertaining and amazing. I guarantee you, I've never looked at animals the same.
And you could go to MetaxasTalk.com and you'll see a picture of Georgie right there.
MetaxasTalk.com, not right. EricMetaxas.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Right. I'm a cat person. My favorite cat I named Mouse. That is absolutely true. Yeah, a delightful cat. What would Colson, that's Chuck Colson, what would his response to Afghanistan be?
Well, I can't say in detail, but because he had common sense, it would be the same response as anyone with common sense, and that would exclude the current pretender to the White House throne. Anybody knows that the way we got out of there was about as disastrous and humiliating as you could imagine, which has to make you wonder who is really running things and why would they do that? I mean, someday we may get an answer, but the fact that we don't have answers is at least scandalous. It is at least scandalous. It is monstrous. So that's an easy one. I mean, Chuck Colson, we don't even need to think very hard on that. Yeah. Yeah.
This is going to dovetail off of that question. Do you believe that we'll see foreign military on our soil sometime in the next 3 years?
You mean like Antifa? Sure. They're in Portland right now in their parents' basement smoking weed and using patchouli oil. Let's see. foreign military. No, I don't see that. I have hope for America. I believe that we, by the grace of God, still have the hand of God on us.
Well,
and that this is a good time to remind people, 21 days of prayer. Go to letusworship.us and sign up, letusworship.us, or don't. Just fast and pray on your own with your Bible study group. Pray for the nation. We are in the crucible right now. This is a really key time. I think we're out of time here. Yeah. We'll have more Ask Metaxas. Same time next week, Thursday in hour two. God bless you. Hey, folks, you wish you remembered names better and thought more clearly? Improve your memory with VivaLore Memory Support. VivaLore's founder prayed that God would show her the solution to memory loss when her mother had dementia. Divine encounters, faith, and her background as a pharmacist led Susan Gibson to create VivaLore Memory Support. VivaLore is a premium quality all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. It's won numerous awards and has 3 books independently written about it. Visit VivaLore.com for testimonials about the life-changing improvements people have experienced. VivaLore is for those with normal memory, mild, or severe memory loss. Do not wait till your memory slips. The pathology starts 20 years before your first memory loss symptom. VivaLore is V-I-V-O-L-O-R. Go to VivaLore.com, buy 3, and get 40% off automatically applied. That's 40% off if you order 3. The makers pray that God's healing presence rests on every pill. VivaLore.com, V-I-V-O-L-O-R.com. Check it out. Hey there, folks. I get to talk to my friend, Dr. Michael Gillen, about science and faith, and you get to listen in. I promise you. Well, first of all, let me say, Michael Gillen, welcome to the program. You've been a friend for a long time. You've been a scientist for way longer. your new book is titled Believing is Seeing. A physicist, that's you, explains how science shattered his atheism and revealed the necessity of faith. So congratulations on the brand new book. What is the headline in this book? You've written other books. I love talking to you about faith and science and how compatible they are, putting it mildly. What's the news in this one?
I think the news is that for the first time, I tell the full story, Eric, of my journey from atheism to Christianity. And I was dragged into Christianity, kicking and screaming. And the other headline is that for those people who believe that Christianity is somehow anti-science or is completely incompatible with science, I'm living, breathing proof that's not true, because I live quite comfortably in a quite enlightened state being both a scientist and a Christian. So I guess that's the headline. And it's great to be on the show again, my friend.
Oh, it's great. It's always fun to see you because,
yes.
Look, I think truth should be fun. You know, science, faith, all these things, exploring these things, it really can be a lot of fun, and you get that. Just for my audience's background on who you are, tell us about being a physicist and then getting to be work with ABC, just so they understand where you've been coming from.
Well, you know, ever since I was a kid, I dreamed about becoming a scientist, and I was born in East LA, so that was kind of on the wrong side of the tracks. I had never met a scientist in my life, but there it was. From the second grade, Eric, I just felt head over heels in love with science. And that dream took me from East LA to UCLA to Cornell and then on to Harvard and beyond. And during those years, during that time when I was educating myself as a scientist, I didn't believe in God. I didn't even think about God. He wasn't on my radar. I slept about 3 hours a day. And the rest of the time I was either holed up in my lab at Cornell or I was in the classroom studying about the universe. And then just stuff started happening to me that had nothing to do with my dream. And in fact, I make the distinction between dream and destiny. We can get into that if you want. But really, my dream was just becoming a scientist. So when I got to Harvard teaching physics to kids, I just thought I was on top of the world. I had fulfilled my heartfelt passion. And I'll tell you one thing quickly because of what you just said. when I was teaching there, it was considered a core course at Harvard. And it was an A course. So we had Science A courses and Science B courses. The Science B courses were the soft sciences. The Science A courses were like physics and biology, the hard sciences.
Wait, what soft science? Like phrenology?
Yeah.
Astrology?
Yeah, among that. Astrology.
American studies? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, right.
Communications?
Psychology,
yeah.
For example.
Okay.
Sociology. Those are considered the soft sciences.
Yeah, they're not even sciences, but thank you. Okay, so go ahead.
No, I'm just telling you the story because of what you said about truth being fun. And so most of the kids who took the class were seniors. They just waited till the bitter end to take the class because they needed to in order to graduate. So they'd come to me, you know, all worried with it. Oh, Dr. Gillen, I haven't taken science since high school. I'm so worried about it. I said, you know what? First, take a deep breath. We're going to learn a lot, but more than learn a lot about physics and about the universe, we're going to have a lot of fun. And do you know my reward, Eric, was at the end of the semester, so many of them, most of them, nearly all of them, in fact, I can't even think of a single exception, they'd come to me and say, wow, I didn't know physics was this much fun. If we'd known that, we would have taken it long before that. So I agree with you. Truth is not only important, and not only enlightening, but it's also an awful lot of fun. So I've had a ball being a scientist all these years, more years than I care to admit to.
Well, I don't know even if I've told you, but my new book, which is coming out like any day, any week here, it's called Is Atheism Dead? And it's all the first part of it is all about faith and science. And I have been astonished to learn that not only does science point to a creator God dramatically, like insanely, but science comes out of Christian faith. You would think in the world we live in that science and faith are enemies. It's exactly the opposite. And we live in this bizarre world. I mean, it's hard for us to realize we live in a world where most of what we know is wrong, you know? Like that idea that science, there's science here and there's faith over here. And you think, well, no, truth is truth. They point to each other. But you have lived this. So let's talk about this. What is it in this book, Believing is Seeing? Well, first of all, there's the question. Why is the title Believing is Seeing? We usually say seeing is believing.
Because when I was an atheist, I lived by the motto, seeing is believing. You know, if I can't see it or taste it or touch it, if I can't acknowledge its presence, if I can't access something with my five senses or with the scientific instruments that enhance my five senses, then I'm not going to believe in it. So it's like the Missouri, you know, the show me state. But then I learned something that really floored me, and I talk about this in the book, and that is, it's one of the really two stunning things that I learned about the universe when I was young, becoming a scientist, and that is, we now know from our exploration of the universe that most of it is invisible to us. Now, I don't know how deeply you want to dig into this, but if you bear with me for a second, I think you'll find it interesting, and your listeners will, and viewers will too. What do I mean? That there is the observable universe, and then beyond the observable universe, there's an unobservable universe. That's the light from that part of the unobservable universe will never reach us because the universe is expanding at a rate so that the light can never catch up with that expansion and get to us. Okay.
I'm
so
sorry. What?
The observable universe.
Huh? No. What you just said is so heavy. We got to stop, and we got to make sure everybody got that. Okay. Light travels. You ready? At the speed of light. Did you guess? Light travels at the speed of light, but the universe is expanding. Well, it can't be expanding faster than the speed of light.
Well, we believe there. If you look at inflation now, which is
under Biden, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. okay. This is what I love about you, man. I love you, brother.
You love my stupid interruptions? My audience does not love them.
No, I love them. I love that's what makes you you, and this is what I adore about you and what I always love talking to you. So many other hosts are just, yes, okay, Dr. Gillen. Yes, but, you know, no. So when I talk about inflation, I'm talking about the standard cosmological model, which most people know as the Big Bang Theory. We have amended the Big Bang Theory to include a phase we call inflation.
Right,
I talk about it in the book. That's that initial moment, I mean, a fraction of a second, we believe, in science, when the universe went whoosh, like a, you know, like when you put a balloon in one of those tanks of helium at a carnival,
yeah,
and the guy puts it in and he turns on the valve and it just whoosh, Well, we believe that that inflationary period, the universe could have expanded even faster than the speed of light.
Okay, now I've not heard that before. I'm really, I love hearing stuff like this. This is why I love talking to you. So we believe, as of what we know now, that the initial phase that's called inflation, and I know because I write about the folks who talk about this in my new book, Is Atheism Dead? But I didn't get into this. So you're saying that there's an initial period of the expansion of the universe after the Big Bang called inflation, where it may in fact have expanded even faster than the speed of light.
Right, and then that gave way to a period called reheating, and it was almost instantaneous, and that's what ignited the Big Bang that everybody knows about. But what without getting too far into the weeds, what I'm explaining to you is that in astronomy and cosmology, which is one of my specialties, we believe that there is the observable universe, which is quite large, and then beyond that is a segment of the universe that whose light will never be able to reach us.
It's so there, we just can't see it.
And we never will be able to see it. So what I'm saying is that when I learned as a young scientist that most of the observable universe is invisible. So it's even, in other words, I'm now talking just about the so-called observable universe. I learned early on that most of that is invisible. Now, when I was a grad student,
how can that be?
Well, I'll tell you why.
Because are we getting into dark matter now? What are we talking about?
Not yet,
my audience is wondering, you know, they're going to have to pull over the side of the road and soak their heads because this is heavy stuff, Michael Gillen.
Yeah, it is. So, but here's the thing. When I was a grad student, they didn't call it dark matter or dark energy. We called it the missing mass problem, which is when we looked at the galaxies, and galaxies were a particular interest of mine. And in fact, I ended up writing my thesis on galaxies, but without going into all of that, when we look at galaxies, they spin very slowly, like, you know, very slow moving merry-go-rounds. And we can infer from the spin rate how much mass they have. So when we look at how fast the galaxies are spinning, lo and behold, we realize, whoa, wait a minute, they're spinning way faster than they should be. They don't. When we calculate the mass of those galaxies, it doesn't jibe with their rotation rate, with their spin rate. So, in other words, they're spinning faster than they should, which implies that they should have more mass than we can see.
You know what?
So
this is way too deep for me. I'm cutting this off. Albin, cut him off. We'll be right back with Dr. Michael Gillen.
I'm afraid of, I'm afraid that I'm not sure of, a love there is no cure for.
Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works.
Hey, folks, you want to talk about the observable universe? You want to talk about dark matter? You want to talk about the speed of galaxies as they rotate and how that gives us an idea of how much mass there is? And by the way, if you don't want to talk about this stuff, I apologize, because that's what we're talking about right now with Dr. Michael Gillen. The book is Believing is Seeing. So you're saying that we, meaning you and others, were observing the spin of certain galaxies, and it implied that there was a lot more matter and mass than we could see. And so
exactly.
What did we infer from that observation?
So we inferred that there must be something, some substance within that galaxy that is causing it to spin so fast that we can't see. It's an invisible form of stuff. And that's all we called it when I was a grad student. But then in the years afterwards, we came to call it dark matter. So that's what we call the missing mass. That where is this mass that's causing the galaxies to spin so fast? And then beyond that, we discovered that the universe is actually not only expanding, but it's accelerating outwards. That was huge. And I actually covered that when I was at ABC News, because a friend of mine at Harvard was involved in that discovery. And we call that dark matter. The bottom line, just to come back to the point I was making, is that when I learned as a young scientist that most of the universe is invisible, and we now believe 95% of the observable universe is invisible to us, I could no longer live by the motto, seeing is believing. Because here was science now demanding that I believe in a universe, most of which I could not see. So I had to ditch seeing is believing, and that launched me on a very long Hermann Hesse-like journey, you know, a tormented intellectual seeking
Hermann
answers to
Hesse-like
these questions.
Journey. I literally make fun of Hermann Hesse in the introduction to my new book, Is Atheism Dead? I'm not even joking. I'm going to send you a copy. Yeah. When we get off the air, I got to send you a copy. But so what you're saying, I really, you know, I want to be serious and let the audience know that science, or let's say materialists, people who are scientistic, who insist there's no such thing as anything except what we can detect with our five senses, anything beyond the realm of quote-unquote science cannot exist. They make this statement. Now, that is a statement of faith. It's preposterous. But you're telling me, oh, by the way, even science contradicts that idea, because you're saying there is a ton of matter. We can infer the existence of it, but we can't see it. And so that right there causes you to think like, well, maybe we're getting some of this wrong.
Yeah, and more than that, I mean, we call it dark matter, honestly, Eric. We don't know if it's matter, if it's a novel kind of matter, or maybe it's something completely different that we've never discovered. Same with dark energy. These are just placeholder names for things that are genuinely a mystery to science. So we call it matter and energy, but it may turn out years from now that we'll discover, hey, it's neither matter or energy, so it's even more profound than even the names imply.
But so what you're really saying, though, is you're saying that to some extent science, like anything else, is full of baloney. Like they use terms like ether, and then suddenly we realize, oh, by the way, there's no such thing as ether. We used to call the space, the outer space, we'd say there it's loaded up with ether, and then we realize, no, there's no ether. In fact, there's nothing there. We used to say what? I mean, protoplasm, you know, we'd say that there's this stuff in the cell, and then you realize, well, no, that we just used that term because we didn't know what else to call it. You're saying that dark matter and dark energy are like that. We have no idea what we're going to discover. It's probably going to have another name when we figure out what it is.
Absolutely. And whoever actually discovers what it is, if we ever do, will get a Nobel Prize for sure. But even the people who discovered dark energy, which is causing the universe to accelerate, even they admit, we if you think dark matter is a mystery, we have no clue what dark energy is. I mean, that's just the God's honest truth. Now,
do we even know what energy is? And I'm not joking. Energy, we all say energy, energy. We don't even know what energy is technically, do we?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. We don't. We give it. And we know there are different varieties of energy, but there are different. But that's like saying there are different varieties of mystery. We don't know. Frankly, we don't even know when it comes right down. If you really want to get philosophical, we don't even know what matter is exactly, because what gives matter its inertia? What gives matter its gravitational pull? We don't know. And if you go back into the literature, into the history of science, there were tremendous debates back and forth between Einstein and others about what gives matter its inertia and its gravitational pull? We don't know. So again, even these fundamental things like space, talk about space and time and matter and energy. I mean, these are the four basic things that we believe as scientists the universe is made of. We don't know ultimately what that is.
We don't know what time is. People, let's be honest. I mean, no kidding.
No, we don't.
We don't know what it is, but it's in all of our equations.
Yes.
Pretty wild.
Exactly. And even when you look at some of the work that Stephen Hawking did towards the end of his life, and, you know, I had the opportunity to get to know Stephen. I was the first correspondent to interview him, flew to England. That's another story. But even if you look at some of the work he did towards the end of his life, he comes up with a concept of imaginary time. That, I mean, here's the bottom line. You want a headline, Eric? Here's a headline. You would have thought that as we learn more and more about the universe scientifically, we will demystify the universe, that the universe will become more rationally understandable. In fact, just the opposite is happening, that as science progresses in its understanding of the universe, the more mystical, really, the more mysterious the universe becomes. Because for every question we answer, we give rise to 1,000
this
others.
This is the headline, Michael, because we're going to a break here. This is the headline, and I'm not kidding. That's part of what I write about in my book, is that the more science discovers, the more horrified scientists are to realize where science is pointing. It's pointing beyond science. This is counterintuitive. This is big stuff. We're talking to Michael Gillen. Don't go away.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at salempodcastnetwork.com.
Folks, we're talking about science, faith, science, also faith and science. I'm talking to Dr. Michael Gillen. The book is Believing is Seeing. So, Mike, if people read this book, what are they going to get? Because you and I are talking about some really deep stuff. I know your writing is not like this. Your writing is accessible, even though you're a physicist. You know how to write and you know how to communicate. So this is not a book for eggheads. Believing is Seeing. What are people going to find in the book?
I think they're going to find out that there is a conceit among many scientists that somehow science is founded on logic, hardcore logic, and that religion is somehow founded on this squishy marshmallow-like thing called faith, and that faith is somehow something for weak-minded people. Faith is a crutch for people who can't absorb or accept the reality, the harsh logical reality of the universe. And what they're going to find in this book is that simply not true. What they're going to find is that faith underlies the entire human experience, both religious and scientific. It underlies physics, it underlies math, it underlies astronomy, it even underlies logic itself. And so I blow that whole misperception, that seat up. The other thing they're going to find out is that each of us has a worldview. And there are three things about your worldview that matter. Number one, what is it founded on? It's founded on what I call axiomatic beliefs, and I discuss this in the book. Axiomatic beliefs are things we believe in but that we cannot prove, and that's true even for an atheist. An atheist has certain beliefs they can't prove, but they base their entire worldview on them. Number two is the size of the worldview. How big is it? Is it big enough just to accommodate space, time, matter, and energy? Or do you allow for the possible existence of alternative realities? And the third thing about your worldview that matters is its center. What's at the center of your worldview? When I was younger and I was an atheist, I had a very small worldview because I only believed in space, time, matter, and energy. And at the center of my worldview was me and my dream. That's all that mattered to me. And now as a Christian, I have a much larger worldview because I now allow for the existence of spiritual realities. And at the center of my worldview is the creator of the universe. And so those three things, and there's even a test at the end of the book you can take to evaluate your worldview. So I think that a third thing that people will get from this book is this. I said a moment ago, we all have a worldview, and everybody's worldview, I don't care if you're an atheist, a Buddhist, a Muslim, a Christian, or whatever, your worldview is based on axiomatic beliefs you cannot prove. In other words, you have to accept on faith. But the question is, what kind of faith is it? And I explain in the book there are two kinds, misguided faith and enlightened faith. So if somebody says to me or asks, you know, you'll often hear somebody saying, are you a person of faith, Eric? Stop asking that. We are all people of faith.
Right.
All our worldviews are based
especially
on faith.
Especially atheists, and that makes them angry,
yes.
But it's a fact.
And what you have to ask them is, not are you a person of faith. That's a foregone conclusion. Everyone on the planet is a person of faith. The question is your faith misguided or enlightened, Diane? Explain in the book what's the difference. And there's a huge difference. One more thing that I explain in the book too is people who go around touting being logical, it turns out, and I explain this, I have entire chapters on this, logic is the most simple-minded way of reasoning. When you talk about logic, most people are talking about what we call two-value crisp logic, which is Aristotelian logic. It turns out to be that is the most childlike, simple-minded way of reasoning. And I talk in the book about translogical reasoning, which is far more profound, that allows you to see profound truths in the universe, not just the trivial truths that logic will reveal to you. So there's a lot there.
That's very heavy. That is really, really heavy. Because I think of you as a shallow person, and I got to say, I'm really getting a whole different read in this interview. No, listen.
After all these years.
That's my favorite line. Like, deep down, he's really shallow. But seriously, this is the joy, is because you can communicate these things on a popular level, but this is heavy stuff. And it's what we need to be thinking about, because people throw around these terms, logic, faith, reason, you know, and you think, what do you mean by that? Yeah. And what you're suggesting, and you get to it in the title, Believing is Seeing, even that enlightenment nonsense, that there's this there's reason and then there's faith. That itself is a lie. It's preposterous, but you hear it over and over and over again. And atheists seem to say nothing more than I'm anti-faith and I'm pro-reason. You think, what? You don't even know what you're saying. You're throwing these terms around. And by the way, you're not. You know, you say you're these things, but in fact, you're not. So we do have to challenge ourselves and other people. So the book is Believing is Seeing. A physicist explains how science shattered his atheism and revealed the necessity of faith. Did you get a lot of pushback, you know, as you're a top physicist, top scientist, when you came to faith? Were there people in your life who kind of got a little freaked out by this?
Yeah, you know what? I tell the story in the book as well of when I finally became a Christian, and it took me decades. And again, I talk about that journey in the book. It's a very personal journey, but I share what I learned along the way. And really, at the end of the day, that's what this book is about. I'm not trying to persuade anybody to believe in any particular way. I'm just sharing what I've learned on this journey. And when I discovered that Christianity is actually more in line with science, now listen to what I'm saying, and I explain this in detail in the book, and I have matrices and everything to show it. Christianity, the Christian worldview, is more in line with the scientific worldview than the atheist worldview is. And that's also what shattered my atheism, because I always had assumed that atheism went like peanut butter and jelly with science. It's the atheism and science were, you know, a matched pair. But actually, just the opposite is true. Christianity and the scientific worldview are very consistent with one another. When I got to that point and that realization and realized, wow, you know, if I want to continue being honest, then I've got to become a Christian. And that was probably in the 80s. But I held on to that and I remained in the closet, so to speak, until the 90s. And then I confessed my faith in a very unexpected way on ABC News on one morning on Good Morning America. Again, we don't have time to get into it now, but I confessed my belief. And when I did that, Eric, I froze. You know, you've been in front of the camera many years. You know, when you're talking to a national audience, and people had come to know me by then at ABC News. I was doing Good Morning America, 2020, Nightline, World News. I froze. I said, what in the world have I just said? I've just torpedoed my career. And literally, I stood up in a daze, and then something weird really happened. All the stagehands, the camera crews, the gaffers, the prop masters, they all started coming to me and shaking my hand and saying, we've been watching you all these years. We just thought you were an atheist because you're a scientist.
Unbelievable. Michael, we're out of time. What a great way to end. God bless you, my friend. The book is Believing is Seeing. Congratulations. Hey, folks, we've got some fun stuff for you. Elman,
Fun. Oh, man.
It's kind of true. People write to us. An old friend, you can pronounce his name better than I can.
Yeah.
Len.
Yeah.
Sledgeski. Sledgeski. What a cool name. We've known him for years, Redeemer. Yeah. We have all these old friends from Redeemer here in New York. And he wrote, he sent us something, and I just thought, don't we have to read this on the air?
Yeah, I would think we do. He found it himself on the internet searching.
Yeah, I mean, but the point is, it's funny, yeah. And I don't care where it came from. Thank you, Len.
And we want to have fun once in a while in this dark time we live in.
So these are fun things to think about. Yeah. I just like these. Number one,
yeah.
What if my dog only brings back the ball because he thinks I like throwing it?
Very good.
But come on, that's. How come nobody's ever said that before? That is very funny.
And I like this next one. If poison is past its expiration date, is it more poisonous or is it no longer poisonous at all?
That's one of those,
Yeah.
Okay. Which letter is silent in the word scent, S-C-E-N-T, the S or the C? Who thinks of this stuff?
Now, this one
is like kind of random, dumb, fun stuff to think about.
This one is very personal. Do twins ever realize that one of them is unplanned?
Ooh. Oh, that hurts.
Ooh, that
Do they
really...
realize that one of them is redundant? I told you, you and your brother.
I know.
Oh, your twin brother. Let me be specific.
Specific.
You and your twin brother are twins. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you've been twins most of your lives.
Most of it, yeah.
And you're the eldest.
I am, yes.
By a few minutes.
By 5 minutes.
And one of you is unplanned.
I think it was my twin brother. I'm almost positive it was.
You could take turns.
Yeah,
how about that?
We'll do that.
All right. Why is the letter W in English called W? Shouldn't it be called double V?
That's true.
Now, you know something? I actually think it is double V. It's just that we pronounce the V like it, this is I don't know this is, I'm not trying to be funny like but I can look that up because that's actually that bears looking into.
Okay, now here's something that's scientific. Maybe oxygen is slowly killing you and it just takes 75 to 100 years to fully work.
Wow, I never thought of that. That is so scary because it's hard to avoid breathing oxygen.
I'm holding my breath now.
This is a good one. Every time you clean something, you just make something else dirty. I want to know, like, where did Len get this from? It's like from some newspaper, somebody compiled. I just love, these are so dumb, but... You know, we need dumb stuff now and again.
Here's a visual. The word swims upside down is still swims. I think it's upside down and flipped over
or something. I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to swim upside down?
Yeah, no, it does work. Turn it upside down.
Swims backwards. This is like fun stuff for kids. I hope some kids are listening today. Okay. Intentionally losing a game of rock, paper, scissors is just as hard as trying to win. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I like
that.
So
next time you should try to lose, and you might win. You'll get a nice surprise.
Yeah, yeah. 100 years ago, everyone owned a horse, and only the rich had cars. Today, everyone has cars, and only the rich own horses.
Okay, this is a good one. This is kind of heavy. This is heavy. Your future self is watching you right now through memories.
I like that. I like that
these,
a lot.
Where did Len get these?
I just dug them up. The doctors that told Stephen Hawking he had 2 years to live in 1953 are probably dead.
And, of course, so is Stephen Hawking at this point. If you replace W with T in the words what, where, and when, you get the answer to each of them. What, that, where, there, and when, then. Okay, we're almost out of time.
Okay.
Many animals probably need glasses, but nobody knows it. Even the animals, they don't understand what glasses
are. I know the chipmunks don't see very well. They run in front of our bikes.
And here's the final dumb thing for the day. Okay. If you rip a hole in a net, there are actually fewer holes in it than there were before. Hey, folks, tune in to ericmetaxas.com. Thank you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.